a lot going on in the news, of course, because every day there seems to be so much that matters to those of us who listen to AM 950 going on the news, but especially here with the hearings around Supreme Court nominee Kavanaugh and what went on. And we're fortunate to have Jake Falaschini with us. Jake was, as he was just telling me before we came on air, became internet famous today as he was sitting in the row right near the protesters, many of those who would jump up and cause a disruption in the hearings. And Jake was right there. So, Jake, you work for the Center for American Progress. And I'm interested in your work there, what you're doing and why that put you in the Supreme Court hearing, in the Supreme Court justice hearing today and yesterday. What is it that that you're doing when you're there, and what's your impression of how this nomination is going and what has to be done to stop it?
Well, first off, thanks so much for having me on the program. So I'm the director of courts programs at the Center for American Progress. So I handle all of our work around the courts, including state courts and the federal judiciary. And so one of the things we've been very engaged on over the last 2 months is the Supreme Court fight over the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh and just everything that's at stake for the American public. We work on a program called Why Courts Matter, where we try to talk to the American public and policymakers about why the courts are important to so many of the values that we all hold dear, and how many of those could come under threat under a Kavanaugh nomination or a Kavanaugh confirmation, where we would then have a Supreme Court made up of five very conservative justices who have their eyes set on dismantling many of our civil and human rights.
Well, Jake, it's awfully important work, so I want to thank you for it. And I just want to ask, and I've heard this from a number of my friends who don't really, they don't follow the ins and outs of politics the way that I do, and they certainly don't follow the Supreme Court and nominations in the way that you would as a professional. And they've asked, like, hey, isn't this just, isn't he kind of just average for the sort of person that a conservative or a Republican president would nominate? Like, is there something about Kavanaugh himself that is an outlier as to what you will get from anytime you're going to have a Supreme Court justice nominated by a conservative Republican president?
You know, I think what makes Kavanaugh really unique and special is just how much a product of the insider DC swamp he really is. And his just real roots in partisanism and in the Republican establishment and the Republican machine, and not just the conservative legal machine, but very much the partisan Republican machine. You know, his first real job out of law school, you know, after clerking, was working for the Ken Starr investigation to try to indict a sitting president, a Democratic sitting president. After that, he goes and, you know, works on the Bush v. Gore campaign to ensure that people's votes in Florida wouldn't matter and President Bush would become president of the United States. He's then rewarded for that by getting a cush job in the Office of Legal Counsel, and then from there is elevated to one of the most important positions in the Bush White House as the staff secretary, during which time, you know, we have no documents to see what it is that he actually did, because they've all been blocked from view, despite the Presidential Records Act that makes it illegal for those documents to be blocked from the public. Those are public documents. So, you know, he is a part of the D.C. partisan, you know, swamp.
Wow,
went to an elite private school here in D.C. His father was a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. You know, that's what really, I think, sets him apart.
So it's not just his particular perspective. It's not just the way that he's ruled on cases. It's not just the papers that he's written. You're suggesting there's something about the entire package here that has framed someone so squarely in a political and a partisan political frame that it would. Does he seem then sort of unsuited for the role of a Supreme Court justice who is supposed to be nonpartisan in their role?
I mean, if that's what the public wants, is someone who really is coming into this unbiased and without, you know, preconceptions and not from a particular side, then yes, I would say that he is entirely and totally outside of that.
Were you tracking him before his nomination? Like, is he someone that, for you being the director of courts programs for the Center for American Progress, did you have him in your radar? Did you paid attention to his climb, and did you know that he was, you know, the kind of person that someday would be sitting where he's sitting on a day like today?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been tracking him for years, and his opinions coming out of the DC circuit. I was honestly surprised that he wasn't on Trump's initial list of 21, that he was, you know, hoping to potentially elevate to the Supreme Court. Then Kavanaugh made a couple of speeches and a couple of decisions while he was on the circuit court that I think elevated his status within the conservative community. And notably, there were a couple of Federalist Society conventions in between those times where he would have an opportunity to maybe speak with some conservative elite folks about why he wasn't on that list. And then, you know, not surprisingly, after making some statements about presidential and executive power, about a week and a half later, he was put on that list, which really, really makes you suspicious about, you know, why it is that he was nominated by Trump. So, yeah, he's definitely someone that we've been tracking as, you know, one of these kind of legal elite insiders from the conservative and partisan establishment that, you know, could potentially be elevated to the Supreme Court.
Now, one of the things that made big news yesterday was his response to one of the fathers of a student that was killed in Parkland School in Florida. And that when the man came up to shake his hand, Kavanaugh turned away and wouldn't, you know, was very skeptical and scowling at him, turned away and walked away. And my wife saw it, and she doesn't follow this level of detail very much. And she was just totally put off by the guy and his response and how harsh he was. And I don't want to put too much on this, but what I watched of the hearing even today, he doesn't seem to be a very nice person. I mean, his affect. Now, he might be in his heart. I don't know. He might be kind. I don't know. He might do generous things for people and live in a kindly fashion. But his affect, his way of presenting himself, feels very scowly and sort of heavy. Do you have any sense of that? Is he the kind of person that is warm, or has a nice sensibility to him? Or what I've seen on TV, do you think that reflects who he is, and does that impact his way of being a judge?
You know, it's a very good question. What we're seeing of his exchange with the senators is very practiced, right? I mean, they spend a lot of time mooting this. He has several people try to prepare him with questions that they think might come from the various senators. And so, you know, what we're seeing is very rehearsed. It's theater. And what's not rehearsed are those moments like the moment where the father of the Parkland victim went up to him to shake his hand. That's not rehearsed. Those are the few sorts of moments wherein I think you start to see through the veil of what someone is really like. And what I saw yesterday, his response to that father just disgusted me. Yeah. I couldn't imagine how I could possibly have that response to someone like that coming to shake my hand. And I think most Americans really felt that way when they see the video. They have a really similar response. And I wanted to not assume some sort of malintent on his part. And so I watched the video several times from various angles to try to see whether or not, as the White House said, he was just interrupted by a security guard and that's why he turned around.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the many other excuses that they've tried to make up. And when you watch the video closely, it's just not the case. He clearly sees him. He recognizes him. There are seconds in there where he has an opportunity to decide how he's going to react, and he turns around and walks away. And I just, you know, even if someone was my worst enemy, if they had suffered what that father had suffered, I just can't imagine that that's how I would respond to them.
Yeah, I felt similarly. What else have you noticed sitting in the courtroom that we wouldn't see either if, you know, in the clips that we would watch or if some of us are watching the sort of running feed on CNN or MSNBC during the day? What are you noticing in the courtroom about the feel? Does this feel any different than other Supreme Court hearings, justice hearings, or does it feel any different than what you think of those of us who are seeing it on TV are noticing?
It feels so different. I haven't felt anything like this before in dozens and dozens of Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. I've never seen the kind of energy from the folks that are coming into the room and standing up and expressing their dissent. It's clearly getting under Senator Grassley's skin. I think even the Democratic senators are feeling the pressure and really upping their game, being more direct. And you know, oftentimes in the Senate Judiciary Committee and in the Senate in particular, there's an affability. You know, senators work very hard to develop good relationships with one another and to work with one another and to work across the aisle and to have genuinely collegial atmosphere with one another. That is less present in this hearing. The Democratic senators, I think are taking their role and responsibility in this very seriously and understanding that, you know, their vote in this is gonna be determinative for a lot of their constituents, you know, in the upcoming election cycle. Wow. And I truly hope that your listeners and you know everyone out there will see this as, you know, a reason to vote for or against their senators, because it is very important the role that they're performing with this hearing, and I hope voters will take it seriously.
Hey, that's Jake Falaschini. He's going to stick with us here over the break, and we're going to talk more about the hearing going on today to see if there will be approval given from the Senate to support the Kavanaugh nomination to the Supreme Court. It matters to a lot of us, and it should matter to the whole country. So we'll be back here after the break. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Doug Pett.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Lowry Hill Meats, your neighborhood full-service butcher shop that works directly with family farms. Using whole animals gives Lowry Hill Meats the benefit of preparing custom cuts and dry aging. They offer beef, lamb, goat, pork, and poultry, including whole duck, roasting hens, turkey, quail, pheasant, and Cornish hens. Their sausages are made fresh in-house weekly using 40 rotating recipes. Try their handcrafted sandwiches. They are second to none. Lowry Hill Meats is located at 1934 Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis or online at lowryhillmeats.com.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Be sure to pick up your copy of this month's Natural Awakenings magazine, a free local guide to a healthier and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely, local, national, and global stories. Learn about alternative and complementary medicine, nutrition, fitness for body and mind, personal growth, sustainability, and much more. Natural Awakenings can be found at area health food stores, food co-ops, and retail locations. More information is available at naturaltwincities.com. That's naturaltwincities.com.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
We're talking with Jake Falasini about the Supreme Court nomination hearings going on today over at the Senate. He's been in the room. He works for the Center for American Progress. He's director of courts program. And Jake, I was thinking when you were mentioning what you do and in your role there in the last segment, I was thinking, boy, when a Supreme Court justice retires, that must be like your high holiday for someone who does the work that you do, where you get to kick in and say, now I get to put my craft to its test. So I know this is a deadly serious topic and Kavanaugh needs to be stopped, but there must be something for you about this time when the nation's attention is focused on the selection and confirmation of a Supreme Court justice.
It's absolutely true. It's funny. I mean, or maybe it's not funny, but when we have dozens and dozens of lower court vacancies for very important district court and circuit court seats all across the country. There are, you know, over 700 of those lower court judges that are also appointed to lifetime appointments. And, you know, Trump has nominated over 150 of, or nearly 150 of those people to those positions. And, you know, sometimes you're jumping up and down, waving and screaming, trying to get the press's attention about them. And the vast majority of the cases that are filed in the federal courts are decided in those courts. And yet, you know, people don't seem to pay much attention to them. And when the Supreme Court comes up, that's when everyone's paying attention. And you get to speak with the public about why courts matter and why these cases matter and why the judges who are on them or on those courts matter. I wish we could have those conversations all the time for all of the different federal seats that open up.
Well, and you were mentioning before we came on the air that some of the work you were doing this afternoon between being there in the hearing and here on the show, that you were talking about the impact of a Kavanaugh placement on the court and the impact that would have on gun violence. Is that right? And can you say a little bit about that for people who need to put the pieces together about what his placement on the court would mean for our laws and how they impact violence and guns?
Yeah, I might have accidentally heard me sigh there, and that's just because this is an issue that's very near and dear to my heart, and one that where I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, many millions of Americans could have their lives impacted by by Kavanaugh being on the Supreme Court. But, you know, we've had five Supreme Court justices over the last decade or so that have rewritten our constitutional interpretation of the Second Amendment and the rights that those afford to people for owning guns. The Heller decision was the first decision in American history that recognized that people have a right to, that Americans have a right to own weapons inside of their home for self-defense, but that is a private right to self-defense that is protected by the Second Amendment. Before that, the Supreme Court had only held over 200 years that that right was, that the Second Amendment right was limited to the right of serving in a militia, just as the Second Amendment clearly states in the prologue.
Yeah. Well, okay. Can I just pause you there, because that's interesting. Yeah. I've been making that argument for quite a while, and every time I make the argument and say, you know, it's been argued that it's been held by the Supreme Court that this is not for an individual person to own a weapon for their own purposes, but it's to have a formed militia. And I think that practically plays out in what we would now call the National Guard, that a state can have its own group of people to protect the state and not just have the federal government protect them. That's what I and when I say that to people, they look at me as if I have made that up, and that the entire period of time that Second Amendment has been interpreted as an individual personal right to own a weapon for whatever purpose you want to use it for. How has it been that that's such a common perception from so many people?
The NRA has spent millions and millions and millions of dollars trying to convince the American public that that is, you know, is the case, and they've essentially rewritten our history.
If you read
Michael Waldman's fantastic book, The Second Amendment, a biography, I think, you know, you'll have a very good sense of how the Second Amendment has been interpreted over time by the Supreme Court, and how that radically altered in Heller. And where Kavanaugh comes in is that Heller actually came back in front of the D.C. Circuit Court when he was on the bench in a case called Heller 2. In that opinion, in that decision, Kavanaugh actually wrote a dissent in Heller 2 where he wrote that the Second Amendment would be, you know, radically expanded to protect other types of gun ownership and to prohibit states and local Wow. authorities from limiting many, many different types of laws that are currently on the books all
like automatic
the
weapons
States.
And that kind of thing? Do you mean like automatic weapons?
He even said in his questioning with Feinstein today, all but said that he would find assault weapons bans unconstitutional under the Second Amendment.
Oh my gosh!
Which something like 90% of the American public feels that there should be assault weapons bans, and those laws currently exist across the country. But mm-hmm. he all but said that those should be ruled unconstitutional under the Second Amendment today in his back and forth with Senator Feinstein. It was very telling.
What do you believe it would take to stop this nomination? The Republicans seem to have the numbers on their side. I mean, there's one thing to sort of win the hearts and minds of the people who would be dissatisfied with him as seated as a justice. But what would it take to stop his being seated as a justice?
Yeah, I think the clearest win would be to be able to convince the two senators, two Republican senators who have said that they have reservations and are, you know, willing to be open-minded about Kavanaugh. And, uh-huh. you know, those two are Collins and Murkowski, Collins in Maine and Murkowski in Alaska. And then holding our Democrats who, you know, several of them did defect and voted to confirm Gorsuch to the bench. And so we need to hold those Democrats and hold them accountable, and then also win over Collins and Murkowski. There are lots of efforts taking place in both Maine and Alaska to convince those senators that Kavanaugh would be a vote to overturn Roe v. Wade, a vote to increase gun violence in America, you know, a vote to take away our health care. And I only hope that those senators will, you know, step up and be heroes once again for what's right and vote down Kavanaugh's nomination.
Is that what the protesters are saying in the room? It's a little hard on the television coverage to hear what's happening. I know you were in the hearings yesterday and today. Is that what people are, when they're standing up and shouting or holding up a sign, are they on particular issues? What are you hearing in the court?
Yeah, that's a great question. There have been all sorts of issues that people were standing up and shouting out about. Some were talking about presidential power and, you know, Kavanaugh just being a vote for, you know, President Trump to escape any sort of accountability for his actions and his potential collusion with the Russian government to rig the election. Some were shouting about, voting rights and their right to vote. You know, one was saying that he was a vet and that he had a pre-existing condition and that, that a vote to confirm Kavanaugh could be a vote to kill him. And for some of these people, it is literally life and death. I mean, for folks who are on Obamacare and have pre-existing conditions, it could be for them a vote of life and death. There's currently a case in a district court in Texas that where there were hearings today where a district court judge ruled or said that he thinks that because the mandate is now gone because of the tax bill that the Republicans passed earlier this year, that makes the entire constitutional frame of the ACA unconstitutional. If that makes its way up to the Supreme Court, there goes pre-existing conditions coverage. And Kavanaugh could be the fifth and deciding vote on that. For some folks with pre-existing conditions and others that, you know, are alive because of Obamacare, this is literally a life and death issue for them.
Well, that's Jake Falasini. He works with the Center for American Progress and Director of Courts Programs. Jake, thanks for all your good work you do all the time, especially when all of us are paying attention around these Supreme Court nominations. Really appreciate it. Super helpful.
Thank you for having me on. And I just want to say I went to high school in Minnesota, so it's a great privilege to be on your show.
Ah, where? What high school did you go to?
Why is that a high school?
Ah, why is that a high school? Fantastic. Thanks, Jake.